All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I'm giving you my comprehensive scouting report of Falcons fifth round running back Tyler Allgeier, and we'll talk about if he has what it takes to be the Falcons' new workhorse in the Arthur Smith offense.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And like all Locked On shows, you can find Locked On Falcons free and available Monday through Friday on your preferred podcast platform, whether that be Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, or on YouTube. And if you subscribe to the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel, you'll get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. So we're taking our deep look into Falcons fifth round running back Tyler Allgeier on today's episode. We got some insight into him from Matt Waldman and Thor Nystrom. Matt Waldman of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio and Thor Nystrom of NBC Sports Edge sharing their thoughts on yesterday's episode. So if you haven't listened to that episode, always recommend you go check that out. I will be referring to some of the comments that Matt and Thor made in those episodes as part of my evaluation. So a nice level of groundwork to sort of roll around this. But jumping into Tyler Allgeier and sort of his background information, grew up in Southern California, was a two-star recruit out of high school, but wasn't really recruited by any FBS or FCS programs, decided to ultimately walk on at BYU, had to pay for his tuition there, which was considerable given that he's not a LDS church member and they have to pay higher rates for non-LDS people at the school. He was a redshirt freshman, and then after redshirting and then his redshirt freshman year, he split time both at running back and linebacker, having about 17 carries on offense and 26 tackles on defense. Then he finally earned a scholarship the following year and was the lead tailback for the team as a sophomore, exploded on that Zach Wilson breakout year as well, with 1,100 yards rushing and 13 touchdowns. And they leaned on him a lot more with Wilson going to the next level as more of a run first team. And he had 1,600 yards rushing this past year, led the nation with 23 touchdowns. You know, I think he averaged like 13 carries a game in 2020, but that increased to 21 per game this past year in 2021. And you look at some of the other stats that he has, you know, he looks really good on paper. 76 missed tackles according to Pro Football Focus, which was sixth best in the nation. Although if you look at it based off of the number of attempts he got, he fell to 37th in the nation, but that's still, you know, pretty good. He had 20 carries of 15 yards or more, which was 12th best in the nation. He had over 1,100 yards after contact, which was the second best in the nation, 4.2 yards per attempt after contact was 10th best in the nation. But when you pop on the film, I don't think he's as impressive in some of those areas. I think he certainly has a nice all-around skill set. He checks a lot of the boxes that you're looking for at the running back position. He runs with good power. He obviously has enough speed to break those long runs at the collegiate level. His power is mostly generated from him running with really excellent pad level. That allows him to sort of finish these runs and particularly when it comes to defensive backs, punish those guys at the end of runs and in the open field. He runs with good, you know, contact balance and has pretty good footwork to show change of direction ability. He can find daylight in traffic, find those cutback lanes on the second level with that good footwork and good vision, has good hands in the passing game and has enough size to hold up in pass protection. The thing with Allgeier and my biggest knock on him is while he checks a lot of these boxes, I don't think there's one thing that he does particularly well. I don't think there's a single sort of standout trait. And I think that's very effective for a college running back. But I think at the NFL level, with the talent that's going to be bigger and faster, it becomes less impressive. right? And I just think in general, when you project his skill sets in these various areas, he just kind of grades out as kind of average to adequate in a lot of these things. You know, he ran a 4.6. He plays like a 4.6 guy, which is, you know, fine in college when most of the linebackers and whatnot are running 4.7s, and right, a lot of safeties are running 4.6s or whatever the case may be. But in the NFL, you know, most linebackers are now running 4.6s or faster. Most safeties are running 4.5s and corners are running 4.4s. So his ability to break long runs in college was a thing, but I don't think it's going to be a thing at the next level. I think his power is, you know, most of his broken tackles, I think a lot of them came trucking defensive backs and not as many trucking linebackers and ends. And obviously, again, you know, the linebacker play, the front seven play at the next level is going to be better and they're going to be bigger, stronger, et cetera. And so I don't see him being this huge tackle breaker at the next level. And his footwork is okay. Like, again, he's got decent change of direction ability, but he's not making guys miss in the open field. When you see him as a pass catcher, this shows like he's not particularly dynamic with the ball in his hand. So even though he's an effective pass catcher, like, you're not going to be, you know, throwing screens at him and expecting him to get significant yardage with that or checkdowns or whatever the case may be. You know, and so I like Algier a lot. I think he shows the toughness, the grit, to, you know, be an NFL contributor. The fact that he's a walk-on, you know, that sort of, it's a cliche, but like, I think he fits that mentality that you're looking for of guy that's willing to do some of the dirty work type of stuff. He doesn't have a ton of experience on special teams, but I think because of that, you know, sort of grinder mentality, walk-on toughness, et cetera stuff, like, he has, at least he checks the boxes for a guy that you think can be a good special teams player. Plus the experience he has, you know, playing linebacker means he's not afraid to run downfield and make some tackles in the open field. So I think he has tools. You know, the one area that I think is going to hurt him, at least initially in NFL, and this is true of most young running backs as they transition from college to the pros, is the pass protection stuff. We know that that stuff has a big impact on a player's long-term development and how long they can last in the league. If they can't give you plus value on third downs in this passing-oriented league, you know, that's going to limit a guy's long-term viability. And I think Algier, while he's not quite there yet, I think he can develop there. But his pass protection was up and down, and I don't see him having a significant role on third downs, in large part due to the presences of guys like Cordero Patterson and Damian Williams. You know, Patterson obviously being a much more impactful pass catcher, Williams being a little bit more polished as a pass protector. And so I think that's going to hold Algier back so far, at least early in his career, to be an every down player. But I think he can be a part-time player, particularly because I think the reason why the Falcons, you know, liked him and coveted him is because he has that ability to get those sort of tough yards between the tackles. And that will allow us to get into the conversation about why the Falcons targeted him and some of the things that he did and what he does as a scheme fit. And I think he does fit the scheme with the Falcons outside zone scheme. But I do have similar questions that Matt Wallman expressed on yesterday's episode, talking about, is he a better fit in a different run scheme? We'll get into that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons, guys. But before we get there, I do want to remind you to go head on over to lockedonpodcast.com/survey and help us out by making these Locked On shows like the Locked On Falcons better. It won't take too much time to take that survey, and everyone who completes it qualifies for a chance to win one of 10 $100 Ticketmaster gift cards. Again, all you have to do is head on over to lockedonpodcast.com/survey. And while football may be winding down this time of year, it's still a great time of year for those of you that are sports fans. You may be asking yourself questions like, are the Celtics going to come back and tie things in the NBA Finals? Is Tiger bowing out of the U.S. Open? Who's going to win? You know, are the Tampa Bay Lightning going to three-peat as Stanley Cup champions? Who are the Magic going to take number one overall in next week's NBA draft? And if you know or think you know the answers to some of those questions, why not head on over to betonline.net, the number one source for all your sports betting needs and info, whether you're looking for the latest odds, player props or contests, you can find it all at betonline.net. And of course, in addition to all of those other things that we talked about, you can also bet on Wimbledon that's coming up later this summer. Of course, Major League Baseball, there's boxing, there's esports, there's Vegas casino games. You can put out NFL prop bets for later in the fall. All you have to do is head on over to betonline.net to check out the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. So, guys, before we get into the conversation about Tyler Allgeier's scheme fit, you know, you might want to be checking out what the next generation of NBA stars and how they compare to their pro counterparts by going to the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft, where over 50 Locked On and Odyssey experts and insiders break down all 30 NBA teams' upcoming picks, who they should take in the upcoming NBA draft. All you got to do is search Ultimate NBA Draft. Ultimate NBA Mock Draft, I'm sorry, on your preferred podcast platform. It's its own feed. Go check it out, whether it's Apple, Odyssey, Google, or Spotify. And let's talk about Tyler Allgeier. And, you know, I thought AtlantaFalcons.com by Toria McElhaney wrote a very enlightening piece. She talked to area scout Joe Collier and running backs coach Michael Petrie, and they both mentioned the Washington State game as one where, you know, that's where they kind of fell in love with Tyler Allgeier. And in that game with 4 minutes left, you know, basically they handed the ball off to him seven straight times to salt away the game. And he rushed for 51 yards on those seven carries. It had a success rate of over 70% on those seven carries. You know, he was running hard. He was breaking tackles. And that kind of, to me, embodies the sort of grinder mentality that he plays with and that the Falcons are coveting. And I imagine the Falcons are looking for exactly that type of role this year as sort of a 1-2 punch with Cordero Patterson, who I think the Falcons would like to reduce how much wear and tear he takes on his body, given that he's going to be 31 this year. And they want to sort of utilize him as a pass catcher where he is, you know, at his elite a skill set, and more so than as a running back where, you know, he's fine, but like nothing spectacular. And I think that's really what the goal is of drafting someone like Tyler Allgeier, to be that guy that can be that grinder between the tackles. Now, he does fit the Falcons blocking scheme. As we know, the Falcons run a lot of outside zone. BYU ran a lot of outside zone the last 2 years, so he's very comfortable within that scheme. But as Matt Waldman discussed on yesterday's podcast, I do kind of think that Allgeier might be a better fit in more of a gap running scheme, and a scheme that runs a lot more inside zone than the outside zone. Obviously, the Falcons, if you don't know, so I guess it's not obvious. If you don't know, the Falcons were dead last in the NFL in terms of runs up the middle last year. And I think that's one of the reasons that they're attracted to Allgeier, that they can hope be a little bit more willing to run up the middle. And, you know, I do think some of his more impressive runs came when he was running between the tackles. I think his footwork and change of direction is better when he's running in sort of those confined spaces, because he doesn't have great cutting ability and quickness and whatever. So when he gets out on the edge, when he gets out, you know, in some of these wide zone runs, that cutting ability is not nearly as good. And that was something that Matt Waldman talked about, where sometimes he kind of overestimates his ability to make guys miss and break out of plays in the open field. He's very reminiscent of Mike Davis in that regard, who was another player that has a similar skill set. And one of the things that compares between Davis and Allgeier is that they have a tendency to have to stop their feet in order to change direction. They don't have that sort of quick cutting ability that players like Devontae Freeman had, or even a bigger running back like Jamal Anderson, who could sort of, you know, cut off of one leg and whatnot, and not have to sort of stop his forward momentum to make guys miss in the open field. And I think that ability is more than fine at the collegiate level at BYU, especially playing behind a really good offensive line that, you know, Allgeier could really do a great job showing patience. That's another skill set that he possesses, to wait for his blocks developing, because he knew his guys would be able to hit those plays. But I think the concern is going to be at the NFL level, particularly here in Atlanta, if you have that questionable blocking up front like the Falcons seem to do. You know, we saw this with Mike Davis and the Patterson dynamic, that for most of last season, until basically Patterson got hurt midway through the year and then the things kind of evened out. But for at least the first half of the year, Patterson looked like the more effective running back, because due to the Falcons' questionable blocking, those windows and those creases were not big holes that were developing, and you needed to be the better running back was going to be the guy that could hit those holes and hit those creases much quicker than the other one. And that's why Patterson was better for a chunk of the season than Davis. And I feel like because Davis and Algier have very similar skill sets, Algier is not going to thrive behind this Falcons offensive line. I also think the thing that Davis has over Algier is I think Davis is a lot more powerful of a runner that did have the power that was going to truck NFL linebackers and certainly NFL defensive backs more so than Algier did. And so part of me kind of wonders that Algier might benefit from putting on some muscle, that he might benefit from being 235 pounds if the goal is to make him this big time grinder type of running back. And I don't think it's going to really hurt his speed or quickness all that much, because his speed and quickness aren't, you know, special in any regards, kind of average at this point in time. Or he could go the opposite direction and slim down, and that will help increase his speed and quickness. He'll never be super explosive or super dynamic, but it will certainly aid, given that, you know, again, and since he's not a particularly powerful running back, it won't hurt him in that regard. So he's kind of a tweener right now, where I feel like where he is right now, it's not the perfect balance of the two. It's just like, I think he needs to either drop 10 pounds to get like 215 or add 10 pounds and get to like 235 or something like that. So that's kind of where I'm at with Algier. He checks a lot of the boxes, but he doesn't really excel at anything. And I think in today's NFL, you kind of need to have something that you excel at that makes you different, because we know in today's NFL, running backs are often treated as a dime a dozen at that position. And whether it's you possess the speed or you possess the power or the quickness or the vision or the pass catching ability or the pass protection skills, you need to have something that you do better than most other options a team could find. Or otherwise, you know, the team is going to turn to other players to provide those roles. All right. You need to be more of, you know, the league is gearing running backs to be more of specialists nowadays than necessarily the all around, you know, two decades ago when it was a run first league. You know, you could be a player like Algier and be this grinder, and hey, we're just going to feed you 20 times and it's going to work in our offense. Like, that's not really how today's game is really played. Right. Instead, nowadays in this pass first league, if you're a running back, you might only get five carries. And so you need to be able to maximize those five carries in a game. And that's why you see a lot more guys that are big speed guys or guys that, you know, a 240-pound power running back like a Ramondre Stevenson or somebody like that, you know, tend to make a little bit more sense in today's NFL. And so the other factor I'll say about Tyler Algier, going back to the offensive line thing, is similar to what Thor Nystrom was expressing on yesterday's episode as well. I do think that Tyler Algier was a major benefactor of BYU having an offensive line that, relative to their typical level of competition, they were able to dominate, right? That was a big knock on Zach Wilson in the pre-draft process, was like, they didn't play anybody, right? You know, and that's not BYU's fault, because it was a COVID year and they kind of had to make up their schedule on the fly or whatever. And basically, like, you know, basically call around to various teams, like, do you want to play this weekend or whatever? Like, so it was only a handful of, you know, it wasn't the powerhouse teams that were making those changes to their schedule or whatever the case may be. But it's very clear that, like, when you watch the film, like, you know, Tyler Algier is running through, you know, these really massive lanes and these really wide alleys in a lot of these games where he's racking up, you know, 150 to 200 yards rushing in a lot of these games. Like, there's a lot of games where, you know, he's not getting contacted until he's like 6 or 7 yards down the field. Right. And in those instances where he's finding those cutback lanes, it's easy to do, right? Or easier to do. Like, I couldn't do it. Probably most of you guys couldn't do it either. But, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, for most running backs. So I do think, like, that's a part of the reason why his after contact numbers are so good, because, like, you know, he would get 6 yards down the field, then truck a safety, and then, you know, sprint another 40 yards for a touchdown, or you know, another big gain or whatever the case may be. And he's racking up these big after contact numbers. But, like, a lot of that is the offensive line, you know, doing the bulk of the dirty work. And it's not to sit here and say that he was, you know, purely benefiting from the offensive line. He did his fair share. And again, that Washington State game, where a lot of it was, you know, if it's blocked 3 yards, I'm getting, you know, I'm powering for another 5 or 6 yards or whatever the case may be. He has that ability in him, but I thought against the better competition, as Thor Nystrom pulled out, teams like Baylor or whatever the case may be, because of the teams that had those better athletes, and Baylor, relatively speaking, again, no one's going to sit here and tell you that Baylor is, you know, Alabama or Georgia from an NFL talent standpoint. But we saw this past year's combine that Baylor has a lot of NFL caliber athletes on their team. And, you know, those guys were able to really keep, you know, Tyler Allgeier confined, where BYU didn't have this big advantage in the trenches in that game versus in others. So I think, you know, Allgeier is not going to be as effective at the NFL level as he was at the collegiate level. Similarly, where, like, if you were to just basically transport Tyler Allgeier or BYU's offensive line in the SEC against premium competition, I don't see him, you know, rushing for 2,700 yards over the last 2 years like he did at BYU, going up against the level of competition that they were often going up to. Again, they were going up against Power Five schools, but, like, they weren't powerhouses like Virginia, Washington State, you know, USC. Again, these are schools that have been good, had football programs, but are on the downward slide trends when it comes to their programs in some of these recent years. We'll continue today's episode with about Tyler Allgeier, get into the player comparison portion when we talk about his floor, his ceiling, his eye level, and that will be us sort of projecting what he can do, what we can expect from Tyler Allgeier in year one here in Atlanta, guys. But before we get there, I do want to plug the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family, where you can find three shows with four hosts, bringing you all the great coverage of local sports as well as national sports. That's ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanitra Batiste, Hitting Hard with John Chuckery, and A to Z with Mark Zeno. Find them all on the same podcast feed on your preferred podcast app, as well as on YouTube. And if you subscribe to Locked On Sports Atlanta on YouTube, you will be able to check out the Locked On Braves postcast, breaking down every Atlanta Braves win and loss. And obviously, they're doing great in terms of the wins. So go check out the Locked On Braves postcast on YouTube on Locked On Sports Atlanta. And guys, I want to tell you that today's episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With ever increasing numbers of makes and models, you now know it's impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why wait while the person behind the counter orders parts on their computer when you already have access to rockauto.com on the computer at home or in your pocket? Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Instead of spending up to twice as much for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership, Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and they have reliably low prices for every customer. They have everything you need, from brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Just go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. So we're now entering the player comparison portion. And as a reminder, when I do these floors, I'm talking about what I think the player's starting point is, you know, day one in the NFL. His ceiling is, to me, what I think his max potential could be with, you know, some development down the road. And his eye level, you know, or the most development, let's say, down the road. And his eye level is what will happen with some development. So it's like halfway between the floor and the ceiling. So my floor for Tyler Allgeier is Devontae Booker, former fourth round pick out of Utah for the Broncos back in 2016. You know, Booker has primarily been an RB3 and a backup throughout his career. Recent years, he's kind of been a journeyman, you know, being the number two guy behind Josh Jacobs with the Raiders and Saquon Barkley this past year with the Giants, and was decent in those roles. He was decent, you know, as the number two in Denver when he first arrived there, sort of being expected to be the heir apparent to CJ Anderson there. And he did play some as a rookie when Anderson was hurt, but then Anderson came back the next year, played really well. And then Philip Lindsay showed up the next year. And so Booker was kind of buried on the depth chart as kind of their third running back. He's now at the age of 30, currently unsigned, and probably his career's likely to be over unless there's like an injury midseason and some team decides to scoop him up off the list. You know, as an injury fill-in, he's been fine. Has 11 career starts as a running back in those games. He has about 176 carries, 568 yards, so yards per carry of 3.2, three touchdowns, 27 catches, 216 yards, and no touchdowns, just purely in the game, the 11 games that he started. So, you know, there's a couple of decent games that, you know, sprinkled in where he was a productive injury fill-in, but pretty much he's, you know, a RB3 and a low level RB2 that can get the job done, but not going to be a guy that you're going to be married to, right? Like, that's what's happened with Booker the last 2 years as the RB2 with the Raiders and Giants. Like, the very next offseason, both of those teams moved on because they knew they could get someone younger, better, or cheaper than what Booker was providing. In terms of the ceiling, I had Jordan Howard. Jordan Howard was also a fifth round pick in the 2016 draft. And I think they have a similar running style, that sort of more plodding physical style. Obviously, Howard, you know, got off to a really good start and was sort of the Bears' lead tailback his first 3 years in the NFL. And I think, you know, had a really sort of strong rookie season where he had like 1,300 yards rushing. And that was, you know, I don't think a coincidence behind a really good Bears offensive line that was one of the better offensive lines in the league. And then they had sort of diminishing returns over the next couple of years with that offensive line. You saw Howard's production dip. So he went from 1,300 yards as a rookie to 1,100 as year two, and then 900 in year three. And then in year four, they wound up trading him to the Eagles. And I imagine, you know, some of that was tied to they didn't want to necessarily pay him in that regard. And they thought they could do better, and the Bears wound up replacing him with David Montgomery. And, you know, the thing about those Bears offensive lines early in Howard's career, they had a really good interior offensive line with guys like Josh Sitton and Cody Whitehair and Kyle Long. And as, you know, injuries mounted with Long and Sitton got old and Whitehair was moved around, like, that interior stopped being a real strength for the Bears. And suddenly Howard's production was not as effective. He was a good backup with the Eagles. They thought he would be the RB1, but Miles Sanders kind of emerged in that first year. You know, part of the reason why he was also traded to the Bears was because, you know, the projection that he wasn't a great fit in the Matt Nagy scheme or whatever the case may be, and they didn't necessarily want to pay him. So I feel like Algier has that type of potential. If, you know, he plays behind a really good offensive line like Howard did in Chicago in those early years or whatever the case may be, he has the potential to be a 1,000-yard rusher. But probably you're more likely with Algier, you're more likely, you know, 1,300-yard seasons are certainly possible, but I think that will be mostly a byproduct of the offensive line. You know, I think he could be a 900-yard rusher behind a competent offensive line if he was the lead tailback, but probably not too many other years beyond that without really, really having one of the better offensive lines in the league. So my eye level with Tyler Algier, I settled on Peyton Barber. Again, similar style of runner, was part of a committee system in Tampa Bay. Started out his career as the RB3 behind Doug Martin and Quiz Rogers, who was their main third down running back. And then, you know, as time progressed, he got more opportunities and sort of had his peak season in year three, where he was expected to be the backup behind Ronald Jones. But because Ronald Jones, I guess, was in the doghouse for most of that year and barely played, Barber wound up leading that team in rushing. I think he had over 800 yards that season. But ideally, he's probably better suited as a third running back, but certainly is capable of being a halfway decent RB2. But ideally is sort of a part of a rotation in the committee system, and similar to Barber, is probably not going to be your go-to third down running back or your go-to lead guy in that committee, but can certainly be a decent 1-2 punch with some other player. Like, another player that I was thinking about comparing him to was Benny Snell with the Steelers, similar runner. We saw Snell, you know, be an effective, you know, number two behind James Conner for his first 2 years in the NFL. But I think the thing with both Snell and Barber that, you know, is that Tampa Bay was not a good rushing team when they were relying heavily on Barber, and the Steelers also were not a good rushing team in those 2 years with Conner and Snell. And that led to them ultimately, you know, using a first round pick on Najee Harris. And I think that's kind of where I think Algier is going to be. He'll be solid. He'll be decent. He'll be okay. He can get the job done that you're looking for, but you're going to probably ultimately decide that we can do better at this position. And you're certainly probably, if he's going to be one of your top two options, you probably are not going to have a top-notch rushing attack. You're probably going to be a bottom five rushing team with Tyler Algier. And I think that's where my concerns with Algier in terms of where he projects in Atlanta, where right now he's looking at the potential of being one of the top two options. And as I'm sure many of you can guess and have heard me say, I don't have high hopes for this Falcons running game this season. And I think, you know, right off the bat, like, I think the two main issues I'm looking at with the Falcons running game and how Algier figures into it, is a lot of his success is going to be dependent on how much growth this offensive line shows in the second year under offensive line coach Dwayne Ledford. I'm hopeful that we will see improvement, but I'm not expecting massive improvement. Like, I don't feel like Algier is going to be expected to do a whole lot more than what Mike Davis did a year ago, which is probably a guy that can get you like 400 to 500 yards and probably get you, you know, yards per carry closer to 3.5 than he is to like 4.5 or whatever the case may be. And, you know, Davis, as I mentioned before, they're similar. And like Algier, Davis was not a particularly explosive running back. He'll get you a lot of 5 to 8 yard runs, but you're not going to get too many 15, 20 yard runs. And I think Algier is going to be that same type of player. The other factor I think that plays into Algier's immediate projection is game situation, right? We know that that matters when, you know, that determines more often than anything else when teams run the football. And we know last year the Falcons had a couple of games where they were able to maintain their rushing attack, particularly against the lesser opponents. But we know that, you know, if you know, a lot of teams abandon the run in the second half of games when they get down and they need to start throwing the football to get back into the games. What's interesting, you know, a stat that, you know, that you can, the final score is determined, like 80% of the teams that have a halftime lead wind up winning those games ultimately. You know, I think my concern right now, given the harder schedule that the Falcons are going to face, there's not going to be too many Jags and Giants and Lions level opponents, teams that were, by the way, you know, some of the teams that had halftime deficits in the most games last year than anybody else. I don't know if the Falcons are going to be able to stay as committed to running the football in the second halves as often this season. And so that will likely give way to guys that give you more value on third downs in Cordero Patterson, Damon Williams, like we mentioned earlier. And so while I think the goal is to make Algier this solid 1-2 punch with Patterson that can sort of split carries with him and potentially get, you know, 10 or more, you know, carries a game, splitting those reps with Patterson, I think if we find ourselves in a lot more games where we have to kind of abandon the run in third, fourth quarter, you know, Algier's not going to get a lot of run. And so we may see a lot more games where he's only getting like 6 carries or whatever the case may be. And so that's not going to lead to him having a super productive year. And he may wind up, you know, getting in that 300, 400 rushing yard range or whatever the case may be, which is fine, but isn't a massive upgrade over what we had a year ago with Mike Davis. And so, you know, I think Algier is a good player. I think he's a solid role player, but I don't see him as that sort of workhorse feature type of running back that the Falcons have been lacking these last couple of years. I feel like he's a perfectly capable committee running back, but is not probably going to be part or a significant part of a top-notch committee. It would be a committee for a team like the Falcons who, frankly, may not have significantly better options. And when I compare, you know, Algier to some of the other day three running backs the Falcons have taken over the last couple of drafts, you know, if I'm power ranking those guys based off of what I thought of them as prospects, I'd probably put Algier number 2 behind Brian Hill. He'd be slightly ahead of Ito Smith just due to, I think, his size giving him an advantage, although I think Smith was probably a little bit more of a dynamic runner that is better suited to making an impact in today's NFL, as I mentioned earlier. And he's certainly ahead of Quadri Olison, but I think the gap between, you know, Algier and Olison is probably smaller in my eyes than the gap between Hill and Algier, because I just think Hill had a lot more juice in addition to the quality size that he brought to the table. So, you know, I don't expect Algier to, you know, do significantly more than what those guys have done, which have basically become, you know, depth pieces and journeyman guys that have kind of bounced around the league, like Brian Hill and Ito Smith and potentially soon to be Quadri Olison. Although the good thing that Algier has going for him is he has a much better opportunity to get immediate playing time right off the bat in his rookie season than any of those other guys who were basically buried as RB3s the day they showed up, you know, in Atlanta. So we'll just sort of have to see how that plays out for Tyler Algier, and if he winds up being more like Jordan Howard, or if he winds up, you know, being the next, you know, Peyton Barber or whatever the case may be. So we'll just sort of see how that plays out, guys. And those are my sort of thoughts on Tyler Algier, a solid all around player. I think he'll be a valuable role player, and hopefully he can carve out a a role on special teams and get better as a pass protector. And if he does, then he'll certainly have a lot more long-term value here in Atlanta. But I don't expect him, his running skills to be anything that, you know, I think the Falcons will be back in the running back market next offseason. And if they have the opportunity to find a better player, if they have the opportunity to find their version of Najee Harris over, you know, Tyler Algiers, Benny Snell, I think they will certainly jump at that opportunity, or to find their Ronald Jones over, you know, Tyler Algiers, Peyton Barber. I think they will jump at that opportunity. So that is my thoughts on Tyler Algier. We have some more, obviously, scouting reports left with Justin Schaefer. We should get to next week. John Fitzpatrick will probably be a little bit later as I'm planning the timing that as we get into the sort of the offseason. Right. We're, you know, it's, we're off until training camp. And so now starting next week, we'll get into some of these training camp previews. If you want my thoughts on, you know, the potential roster, the roster moves that the Falcons did make on Thursday and what they mean for it, we kind of talked about that on Wednesday's episode, I believe. Or yeah, no, no. What day? I'm sorry. Yeah. Wednesday's episode. Right. On the day one of minicamp. So. Go check out that. Next week, we'll also sort of have part two of Matt Waldman, where he talks more about Drake London and Desmond Ridder. We got some other great summer content that, you know, hopefully will be coming around 4th of July for you guys that I think will be fun for you. So I know we're getting into the dead time of the offseason, but obviously you want to stay tuned to Locked On Falcons. We're going to have some great content still going for you as you get your football fix over this next month between now and when training camp kicks off. And of course, if you are satisfied with your football fix for today as your second listen, why not go check out the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft? I think we're on day two of that on Friday. It started on Thursday, so you missed the first pick, go check out Thursday's episode. You can pick up on Friday, and that will be running this weekend as well as all at the beginning of next week to get you guys geared up for next week's NBA 2022 NBA Mock Draft. So go check that out, guys. I appreciate it. If you want to provide your feedback on your thoughts on Tyler Algier and what he can do and why he'll be better than what I think he is, or do you have some of the same sort of scheme concerns and playing behind a good offensive line concerns that I had, please leave a comment here on the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel. You can hit me up via email at lockedonfalcons@mail.com, or you can hit me up on Facebook or Twitter at Locked On Falcons as well. Always looking forward to your feedback, guys. Appreciate it. I hope you have a great weekend. Till then.